Talking Information Center.
This is the Talking Information Center, a window to independence through local volunteers reading over 300 newspapers, magazines, and books specific to your community.
Now available on your smart speaker by saying, play radio station Talking Information Center.
For comments and more information, call 781-834-4400 or visit ticnetwork.org.
Thank you for listening.
WBDF Middleboro, WRRS Middleboro, WRRSLP Pittsfield, WLLO Londonderry, WVALLP FL, WDJ. Framingham.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Information Center. Please be aware, the Talking Information Center is on holiday break from Wednesday, December 24th, returning on Saturday, January 3rd. During this break, all daily newspapers will be replaced with substitute shows. We hope you have a happy and safe holiday season, and thank you so much for listening to the Talking Information Center, always online at ticnetwork.org.
This is Diane Thompson reading episode 2 of An Unlikely Story by Jen McKinley. In our previous episode, Lindsay Norris, the director of the Briar Creek Public Library, had just arrived on Star Island on a boat driven by Lindsay's ex-boyfriend, Sully. Lindsay was delivering books to two elderly hermits, Stuart and Peter Rosen. Lindsay and Sully became very concerned when Stuart failed to meet their boat on the dock as usual. So Lindsay and Sully ventured onto the property and began to climb the stairs to the porch. Sully paused in front of the porch stairs. Lindsay watched as he examined every bit of the handrails and the stairs. When he finally seemed satisfied, he cautiously put one foot on the first step and carefully stepped up. Lindsay waited until he got up the second step before she followed. On the third step, Sully put his foot on the board and then took it away. He stepped on it again, and it bowed under the weight of his foot. He stayed on the second step and turned to look at Lindsay. "Don't step on that one," he said. "It's been tampered with so that it will break under your weight, and you'll fall right through it. Who knows what you'd be falling into? A pit filled with snakes or a rusty spear? The possibilities are endless." Lindsay's eyes went wide, and she watched, holding her breath again, as Sully stepped over the middle stair onto the step above. He didn't fall through and managed to get up onto the porch without incident. She released her breath before navigating over the faulty step and joining him on the cluttered porch. Lindsay's gaze took in the waist-high piles of birdhouses, picture frames, vintage typewriters, and a stack of suitcases. There were boxes on top of boxes, of which she had no idea of the contents and really didn't want to know. At this point, she wouldn't have been surprised to find a box of shrunken heads. She watched Sully as he put down her crate of books and rubbed the back of his neck as if the sheer piles of stuff caused his back to hurt. Lindsay glanced at the front door. Like the rest of the house, its paint was peeling. The glass window built into the door had aluminum foil over it, making it impossible to see in. She looked for a doorbell or a knocker, but there was nothing but a captain's bell hanging by the front door. "Do you think it's a trap?" she asked, pointing to the bell. Sully cautiously stepped closer to examine it. He gave it a test tap. Not enough to ring it, just enough to move it. Nothing happened. "I think it's okay, but just to be on the safe side, duck down, okay?" "What about you?" she asked. "No worries, I've got this," he said. He picked up a broom handle that looked to have long since lost its broom part. He hunkered down beside Lindsay and threw his arm over her shoulders, covering her from any harm. Then he reached up and smacked the bell. It clanged repeatedly as the clapper struck the sides and the bell swung back and forth. Lindsay tensed, waiting for the door to open, for someone to call out, for something to happen. The bell slowly stopped clanging, but no one answered the door. "At least an axe didn't swoop down to lop off our heads," he said. "Yes, but now I'm even more worried," she said. "There is no way they didn't hear that." "Me too. Let's try the door." Sully moved in front of the door. He lifted the mat and ran his fingers over the door frame. He checked the doorknob. It was locked. Lindsay glanced around the littered porch. If the brothers kept a key out here, it could be tucked into any of the hundreds of items crowding the porch for breathing room. Lindsay joined Sully by the door. There had to be a way in. Her anxiety was spiking as the brothers didn't answer, and she couldn't shake the feeling that something was terribly wrong. "I can try to bust down the door," Sully offered. Lindsay glanced at the old-fashioned window, made up of 9 smaller panes of glass that sat in the middle of the door. Something was off. Usually, when people put aluminum foil on a window to block light, it was on the inside of the glass. But on the lower left-hand pane, it was on the outside. She leaned in closer. She poked one of the panes with her finger. The aluminum foil tore beneath her finger. "I don't think we need to break anything but some tin foil," she said. She stepped back and showed Sully. He raised his eyebrows. "I'm impressed," he said. "Don't be," she said. "I'm afraid to stick my hand in there." He bent down and peered through the small hole she had made. "I think I'm afraid, too," he said. He made a comically terrified face, and she smiled. Then, without hesitation, he reached in and unlocked the door from the inside. He pulled his hand out and shook it as if to make sure all of his fingers were still attached. "See? Nothing to worry about," he said. Lindsay went to turn the doorknob, and he grabbed her hand, stopping her. "Wait." "What?" "Just because we could unlock it doesn't mean it isn't booby-trapped," he said. "In fact, I'm pretty sure if you're the type who is going to rig up a trap, you're going to set it up for people when they open your door." "Good point," she said. Let's go on three," he said. 1, 2, 3. Together, they released the knob. There was no kaboom or kablooey, so that was a relief. "So now what?" she asked. Sully stared at the door, as if willing an idea to come to him. He paced in front of the threshold a few times, clearly mulling through the logistics. "It's stepping inside that's the issue," he said. "I want you to stand back, out of sight of the door, while I push it open. If they've rigged a projectile, I should be able to duck out of the way in time." "I really don't like this," she said. "Me either. But I'm worried that we've heard nothing from inside," he said. "They could be sick or injured. We have to find out." Lindsay nodded. She moved back to stand behind an old icebox that looked to be from the 30s. "Okay, then," he said. He turned the knob and shoved the door, using the momentum to dive back into a pile of debris. A whoosh and then a snap sounded, and Lindsay peeked around the icebox to see what had happened. "Sully, are you all right?" she cried. He had thrown himself into a pile of old clothes and newspapers. His nose was wrinkled, as if he found the circumstances quite disgusting. Lindsay felt herself grinning partly in relief that he was okay, and partly at his look of dismay. I'm fine, he answered, pulling himself out of the pile. You? I'm good, she said. They met in front of the door, and Lindsay felt her jaw drop. A large board full of nails had swung forward and would have hit whoever stepped into the house first right in the face. She looked at Sully to see him frowning. That could have been ugly, he said. He poked one of the nails with his finger, sharp and rusty. Lindsay shuddered. If he hadn't stopped her from opening the door, her head would have been turned into a sieve. Eep! Sully led the way into the house, carefully stepping around the board. Lindsay pressed up against his back, again, trying to step exactly where he stepped. It wasn't as if there were a lot of options. A path had been carved out of the stacks of stuff that filled the interior of the house. It led them straight through the foyer and into a sitting room. "Shouldn't we call out and let them know we're here?" she asked. "I suppose," he said. Lindsay got the feeling he really didn't expect anyone to answer. "Hello," she cried. "Stuart. Peter? It's Lindsay Norris from the library. Captain Sully and I have brought you some books." "Hello?" They stood still, listening for an answer. There was nothing. Sully reached back and squeezed her hand, and Lindsay knew he was feeling the same sick-to-the-stomach dread that she was. Something had to be very, very wrong for the brothers not to have responded to people being in their house. They wound their way through the sitting room. Piles and piles of books, floor to ceiling, filled most of the room. The neglect of so many volumes hurt her book-loving heart. In addition to the books, there were newspapers, magazines, and old record albums stacked and crammed haphazardly into every available space. Sully stopped walking and held up his hand for her to do the same. "Do you hear that?" he asked. Lindsay strained her ears for the sound of a voice, but no. Instead, she heard a ticking sound. She looked at Sully in alarm. "Do you think it's a bomb?" He shook his head. "No, but..." He moved forward down the narrow passage and through the doorway into the next room, which Lindsay imagined was supposed to be a dining room. It was full of clocks. The walls were covered in clocks. The table, chairs, and floor were littered with bits and pieces of clocks. There was a box full of batteries, some leaking acid, and a bag full of extension cords. Three upright pianos were wedged one on top of another against the rear wall. And Lindsay felt a heretofore unknown fear of closed-in spaces surge through her, causing her windpipe to shrink in mild panic. "I don't think I can take in much more of this," she said. Sully blew out a breath. "It is overwhelming. I think the kitchen is next. That should tell us if they've eaten recently, at least." Lindsay didn't want to imagine what the kitchen looked like. In fact, she was pretty sure she was going to go home and throw out every single non-utilitarian thing she owned because she was so freaked out. Sully moved forward, however, giving her no choice but to follow. He stepped into the doorway of the kitchen and froze. Lindsay bumped into his back and kept herself from falling by grabbing his jacket. She could tell by the hard set of his shoulders that something was wrong. "What is it?" she asked. "I found Peter," he said. His voice was low and heavy, as if weighed down by the worst sort of news. Lindsay knew, without asking, that Peter was dead. Chapter 4. Lindsay dodged to the side before Sully could stop her to peer into the kitchen. She gasped and clapped a hand over her mouth to keep it from becoming a scream. She had never seen Peter Rosen before, but his resemblance to his brother, Stuart, with his same thin build, prominent features, and fringe of white hair just above his ears, which curved out on the top, was unmistakable. Peter was sitting in his wheelchair at the rectangular formica table in the corner of the kitchen. Blood was caked on his shirt front, surrounding the gaping hole in his chest. A loaf of bread and a block of cheese sat on a plate in front of him, untouched. Lindsay stepped forward with the hope that maybe he wasn't dead. Maybe the eyes staring vacantly at the wall were just lost in thought and she could help. Sully looped an arm around her waist and pulled her close, stopping her. "Don't. There might be another trap," he said. "But we need to check if he's alive," she said. Sully nodded, but Lindsay could tell he had already accepted the obvious. There was nothing they could do for Peter. "I'll go in and check him," Sully said. "You stay right here." He pushed her into the rubble that stood just outside the door. "But I know first aid," she protested. He ignored her. "Don't move unless something comes at you," he said. He turned back to the kitchen and began to examine the doorframe, looking for trip wires or pressure pads or anything that indicated another trap. Satisfied there were none, he stepped into the kitchen and moved closer to Peter. Lindsay was torn between hiding her eyes and forcing herself to watch. It seemed to her that the only way to support Sully was to give him her attention while he dealt with the mess before him. So she stayed focused on his examination of Peter, even when her gag reflex kicked in. It was quickly quite clear that there was no need for an ambulance or medical attention. Sully checked for a pulse at Peter's wrist, being careful not to step in the debris that surrounded his wheelchair, but it proved unnecessary. Even from where she stood, Lindsay could see from the stiffness and discoloration of Peter's limbs that rigor mortis and lividity had already set in. Sully stepped back, wiping his hands on his jeans. He turned to look at Lindsay, and she saw the horrible truth in the set of his jaw. "There's nothing we can do for him. It looks like he took a bullet right through the heart," he confirmed. He left the kitchen and met her in the doorway. "Let's get out of here and call Chief Plawicki." Lindsay nodded. She let Sully take the lead, figuring his naval training made him better at guiding them out of the house. Well, that, and the fact that she was fighting off a case of the dizzies. So much blood. Jeez, there had been so much blood. They went outside the house and huddled on the porch. Sully pulled out his cell phone and called the Briar Creek Police Station. Lindsay watched as he tipped his head back and squinted up at the cloudless sky. "Hi. Yay, it's Sully. I need to talk to Chief Plawicki," he said. "I can wait." He lowered his head to gaze out at the horizon. Then he reached for Lindsay's hand. He wrapped his fingers around hers and gave her a reassuring squeeze. It was almost as if he knew she was fighting to keep her lunch down. "Hi, Emma," he paused, and Lindsay suspected he was trying to find the right words. "Listen, I'm out at Star Island. Lindsay and I were delivering books to the Rosens, but no one came to the dock to meet us. Lindsay heard Emma say something in response, but she couldn't make out the words. "We did go up to the house," Sally said. Emma started to talk again, but Sally cut her off. "I know, I was careful. Look, that's not the point. The thing is, Peter Rosen is dead." This time Lindsay could hear Emma Plawicki's high-pitched voice come out of the phone like a battering ram as she fired questions at Sully. "Lindsay and I are both fine. It looks like a gunshot. He was cut off by more high-pitched chatter. Other than checking Peter's vitals, I didn't touch anything," Sully said. He looked at Lindsay and made a face like he was being chastised like a boy breaking curfew. "I have some training in these matters, you know." There was more squawking, and then the questions started again. "Yes, I'm very sure," Sully sighed. Rigor mortis and lividity have both set in. "No, there's no sign of Stuart, but I didn't check over the house because I figured calling you was priority one." Lindsay heard Emma issuing orders. "Yes, ma'am," Sully said. "We'll meet you on the dock." He ended the call and put his phone back in his coat pocket. "Not a fun call to make," Lindsay said. He was still holding her hand, and she squeezed his fingers with hers, returning his gesture of comfort. "No," he agreed. "Come on, let's go down and meet the chief." "After you." When Lindsay would have let go of his hand, he held on tighter. "Stay close. There could be triggers planted on the way out to get people who were smart enough to miss the booby traps on the way in." They both stepped over the middle stair and began to pick their way down the path toward the dock. Lindsay glanced back at the house, wondering if Stuart was still inside, and if so, where was he and why hadn't he come out? She glanced at the arch-shaped window on the right. Was it her imagination, or had the curtain moved? Could it be just a draft? She stared until Sully's insistent tug pulled her down the path. Although the sky was a pristine pale blue and the sun shone eye-wateringly bright, the wind had picked up and carried the distant nip of February on it. Maybe it had just been an air current from the open front door that had moved the curtain. Lindsay wished she could be sure. She felt the tip of her nose get cold, and she moved her scarf up over her face. The weatherman on the news had said there was a chance of snow in the next few days, and she suspected, by the moist feeling in the air, that it was more than a chance. Once they were on the lower dock, she was struck by how quiet it was on the island. Other than the lapping of waves and the occasional cry of a seagull, the world was hushed, almost as if it knew of the tragedy that had happened in the house perched above them. It occurred to Lindsay that living on an island must be very lonely. She wondered what daily life was like for Stuart and Peter, with no neighbors, no means of communication, no one but each other. She glanced at Sully, who was brilliantly producing a thermos of coffee from a cupboard on the boat for them to share. He handed her the plastic cup, and she let the warmth seep into her fingers through her gloves before taking a sip. "What do you think life was like for them?" she asked. Sully shrugged. "I only know what I've heard, which is gossip and rumors." "And?" she prodded him. He nudged the cup toward her lips, and she dutifully took another sip. "The Rosen house has been in the family for several generations," he said. "As far as I know, Peter and Stuart have the distinction of being the only ones actually born in the house. However, Lindsay gasped, no hospital? No doctor? Their father, Benjamin Rosen, was a doctor, and he delivered them himself, Sully said, or so I heard. Wow, how do you keep a baby from falling off the island into the water? The constant vigilance required to raise toddlers out here is mind-boggling, Lindsay said. Their poor mother. No, not poor at all, Sully said. The Rosens were one of the wealthiest families in the islands. They had a full house staff. In fact, each boy had his own nanny. Oh, so they were a what's a weekend sort of family, Lindsay said. Precisely, Sully said. Dr. Rosen didn't work because he had to, but because he enjoyed it. By all accounts, he was a brilliant man with a hideous bedside manner. He was a surgeon in New Haven, so he lived there during the week and came to the island on the weekends to be with his family. Lindsay frowned. His wife must have been terribly lonely. Sully nodded. He glanced at the house as if trying to imagine it back in the day. Isabel Rosen was a beautiful woman, a concert pianist who had traveled all over the world. She was in a car accident and damaged one of her hands. Dr. Rosen was her surgeon, and they fell in love. He moved her here to the island shortly after they were married, and she stayed here until the day she died. She never left the island? Ever? Rarely. The staff maintained the house and grounds, so there was never any need, he said. What happened to Dr. Rosen? He was killed in a boating accident in the early 1960s, Sully said. Peter was with him and tried to save him, but tragically broke his own back from the effort. He lived, but has been in a wheelchair ever since. They both glanced up at the house this time, thinking of their grisly discovery in the kitchen. That must have been horrible, she said. Trying to save his father and ending up with a broken back and still losing his dad? The broken back for sure, but from what I've heard, their father was a miserable, mean old man who hated his sons because neither of them became a surgeon like him. Stuart was more of an engineer, and Peter was a musician like his mother. I'm not certain they felt his loss in the way sons normally do. Were they close to their mother, at least? You would think so, because they never left her. But the people in town who knew her described her as a very cold woman, aloof and withdrawn, Sully said. The brothers did take care of her until the day she passed. So maybe she was warmer to them than she was to the other island residents. I hope so, she said. Her chest felt tight at the thought of the two brothers having two awful parents, never leaving their island, and never having any sort of a life of their own. Here comes Emma, Sully said. He pointed to a small speedboat headed their way. Lindsay turned to look toward town. Sure enough, she could see the heavy police coats that the officers in the boat wore, the long dark hair of Emma Plawicki, the current chief of police, streamed out from under her hat. Next to her, driving the boat, was Officer Kirkland, the newest member of the Briar Creek PD. How do you think she's going to take this, Lindsay asked Sully. That it's you and me finding the body, he asked. At a guess, not well. Lindsay sighed. She liked Emma. She was smart, efficient, and dedicated to serving her community. Lindsay considered her a friend. But still, things had happened in the past where they had withheld information from each other, and their relationship was a bit strained at the moment. Lindsay didn't think the fact that she had found another body was going to help the situation. Kirkland cut the engine and let the boat gently glide up beside the dock. Sully grabbed the boat to steady it. Emma leapt out with a messenger bag slung crosswise over her shoulder before the boat stopped moving. Kirkland, head back to the town dock and bring me out as soon as he arrives, she said. You sure you don't want backup? Kirkland asked. Emma gave him a close-lipped smile. Don't worry. You can examine the scene with the medical examiner when you come back out. Kirkland nodded, but Lindsay could tell he was disappointed. Sully gave the boat a shove, and Kirkland headed back to the shore. Emma turned to face them. Her eyes narrowed as she studied them with concern in her warm brown gaze. Sully, Lindsay, she said, how are you? All right? We're fine, Lindsay said. She glanced at Sully, and he nodded. Can you tell me exactly what you found? Emma asked. Wouldn't you rather I showed you? Sully said. No, I want to keep the foot traffic up there to a minimum, Emma said, until we know what we're dealing with exactly. She didn't say that it could be murder. She didn't have to. A gaping hole probably caused by a bullet to the chest usually only meant one thing. Lindsay felt her anxiety spike. Where was Stuart? Was he in the house somewhere? Had he been shot too? Had it been a break-in? Should they have stayed to look for him? The whole thing had been so shocking, she didn't know what to think or do or say. She let Sully do the talking. He warned Emma about the middle step on the stairs and the traps they had already found. He then described the state of the house and how they had found Peter. Emma listened without interrupting. She then looked at Lindsay. Can you think of anything else? She asked. No, Lindsay shook her head. That covers it. Okay, then. Look out for the middle step and check all of the doorways and the flooring, Emma said. She shouldered her bag and began to walk away. At the stairs, she turned back around and said, Sully, when Kirkland gets back, you two can leave, but I'd like you to stay for now and keep an eye on things here. No problem, Sully said. Shout if you need me. Emma waved and jogged up the stairs to the deck above. Lindsay wondered what the police chief would make of all the clutter. She turned to say as much to Sully, but then paused. She couldn't believe she hadn't seen it before. She grabbed Sully's arm, and he glanced from the deck where he was watching Emma's progress to Lindsay. Are you okay? He asked. You look like you've seen a ghost. I think I'd prefer it, she said. She pointed to the end of the dock. Is it just me, or was Stuart's boat tied up here when we arrived? Sully whipped his head around. It's not you. His boat was here. He walked over to examine the metal tie-downs. He squatted down and reached into the water. He pulled up a length of rope still knotted to the metal bracket on the dock. It was short and cleanly severed, as if it had been cut. Whoever had left on Stuart's boat, they had been in too much of a hurry to untie the boat properly. Sully dropped the rope and shook the water off of his fingers. He stuffed his hands in his pocket in an attempt to warm up. He must have been here, Lindsay said. Why would he leave? I don't know, Sully said. His voice was grim. Neither of them voiced the obvious conclusion that Stuart had left because he shot his brother. Lindsay wouldn't say it because she just couldn't believe it. I don't think Stuart has ever left the island in daylight before. As I mentioned, he generally only goes out at night, Sully said. How does he get all of that stuff up there by himself? No idea, he said, but I suspect there is a lot we do not know about the Rosen House. I know Emma told us to stay here, but if Stuart, or whoever just left, there's a chance we could spot them somewhere in the islands if we take the taxi out, Lindsay said. Sully stood and took his phone out of his pocket. I'll call it in to Emma. I don't want to leave her here alone without letting her know why. He scrolled through the contacts in his phone and then pressed the display before putting it up to his ear. He was staring at the house as if willing Emma to pick up. After several seconds, he ended the call with a frown. It went to her voicemail, he said. Maybe she's on another call, Lindsay said. Or she's in Boom. The sound of an explosion cut off Sully's words and made them both jump. The dock rocked beneath their feet, and Lindsay flailed her arms in an effort to regain her balance. Sully reached out a hand to steady her, and she grabbed his arm. What was that? He asked. It came from the house, she said. Are you good? Lindsay nodded, and he let her go. He sprinted for the stairs, and she was right behind him. As they reached the upper deck, they saw smoke billowing out of one of the second-story windows. Emma, Lindsay cried, and she pushed around Sully to race into the house. Chapter 5. Sully caught her around the waist and held her back. Lindsay shrugged, but it was useless. Lindsay, stop, he ordered. You can't go racing in there. Who knows what has been triggered? There could be more explosions. But Emma, Lindsay protested. I know, but we have to go in carefully, he said, just like we did before. Step where I step. Ready? Lindsay nodded, and he let her go. He hurried up the walkway, scanning back and forth as he went. Lindsay felt numb as she stumbled along behind him. It was too much, first finding Peter and now knowing Emma was in trouble. She didn't think she could bear it if this went as badly as she feared. They moved swiftly as they retraced their steps. Whatever had exploded, it seemed to be coming from upstairs. They entered the house, and Sully veered right to the staircase that led upstairs. He hurriedly checked that there were no traps on the stairs. Lindsay didn't see how there could be, since the stairs were jam-packed with more boxes, books, and clothes, leaving a very narrow path against the wall to ascend. Emma, Sully called out as they made their way up, we're on our way. Lindsay thought she heard a moan, and she hoped with all that she had that it was their police chief and that she was okay. At the top of the stairs, Sully paused. Lindsay glanced around his shoulders and felt her jaw drop. The small landing looked like it had been hit by an earthquake. Here, I'm over here. Sully moved cautiously forward, trying to pick his way through the mess without causing more damage or setting off any nasty surprises. Lindsay shadowed him. Emma was on the floor in the doorway to one of the bedrooms. She was pinned face down under a white wrought iron table. It looked as if she'd been trying to pull herself free. She glanced over her shoulder at them and pointed into the bedroom. Fire first, she croaked. Sully stripped off his jacket as he stepped over Emma and into the room. Several boxes were on fire, and he began to beat the flames out with his coat. Lindsay knelt beside Emma. If I lift the table, can you pull yourself out? It's too heavy, Emma protested. Let's try anyway, Lindsay said. She moved back to where the tabletop had Emma trapped. She tried to get a grip on the table, but the cascade of slippery magazines beneath her feet made it impossible to attain any leverage. She kicked the heap out of the way. Squatting down, she grabbed the table edge and said, "On three. One, two, three." Lindsay heaved with all her strength. The table was a backbreaker, and she gritted her teeth as she lifted. Emma pulled herself out just as Lindsay was losing strength. "I'm clear," Emma cried, and Lindsay lowered the table. She glanced at Emma's face and saw beads of sweat on her lip and brow. She glanced down at Emma's leg. Her pants looked tight, as if they were about to burst at the shin, and her foot dangled limply. It was clearly broken, and Lindsay could only imagine the amount of pain Emma was in. The flames of the fire were reduced, but Sully was still fighting it. Lindsay knew she couldn't carry Emma down the stairs. Sully had to be the one to do it, but the fire had to be controlled, too. She stepped carefully into the room in the tiny space available and noted that a window had been smashed wide open, probably by the explosion. She moved in beside Sully and took one of the old suitcases that was on fire and tossed it out the window. Sully looked at her in surprise. Then he followed her lead. Together, they threw out anything in the room that was on fire or smoking, and in minutes the flames were gone and the smoke dissipated. "Good thinking," he said. His chest was heaving, and he was covered in soot with ash. Lindsay knew she looked the same. "Emma's leg is broken," she said, sucking in some of the clean air by the window. "Can you carry her down?" "On it," Sully handed Lindsay his shard coat as he dashed back to Emma. To her credit, Emma only cried out once when Sully lifted her into his arms. Lindsay knew that Emma had to be about to black out from the pain. Once outside, Sully put her down on the porch. Lindsay called the station requesting medical attention for Emma while Sully hustled out to the front yard and very carefully stamped out the fires from the items they had tossed through the window. They were just settling in to wait when Officer Kirkland and the medical examiner, Dr. Griffiths, appeared on the upper deck above the dock. "Chief," Officer Kirkland broke into a run, "what happened?" "Stupidity," Emma answered on a groan. Before Kirkland could hit the steps, Sully grabbed him. "Stop," Sully said. "The middle step is rigged. You'll break your leg or worse." "What?" Kirkland tried to shake him off. "Listen to him," Emma said. "I should have." Kirkland stopped struggling and looked questioningly at Sully. The Rosen brothers discourage visitors by booby-trapping the property. Traps are everywhere. Sully pointed to the open front door, and they all glanced at the board with the nail still hanging low in the doorway. "Whoa," Kirkland said. Dr. Griffiths moved past him, stepped over the rigged stair, and knelt beside Emma. His long gray coat spread out about him, and he pulled off his leather gloves and shoved them into his pockets. Both his gray mustache and his gray fringe were ruffled, clearly signifying his agitation. "Just the leg?" Griffith asked as he opened his bag and pulled out some scissors. "That's not enough," Emma returned. "Aw, man, do you really have to cut the pants? They're new." Lindsay glanced at Emma's face. It was pasty pale and coated with a sheen of sweat that dampened the hair at her temples, despite the frigid air. Yes, I do. And be thankful that's all I'm cutting. If you were one of my cases, I'd be splitting your abdomen and weighing your intestines. Comforting, Emma grunted. Your bedside manner is top-notch, really. And now you know why I'm the medical examiner and not a general practitioner. He put his scissors back in his bag and moved aside the cut fabric. He ran his fingers over the large knot on Emma's shin. Looks like you have a closed fracture of the tibia. With any luck, it's also incomplete, meaning cracked and not snapped in two. While he was talking, Emma took over her phone and started texting. Emma gave him a dark look, which she matched. I'm texting for backup to help investigate the scene with you, since clearly I'm out of commission. Lindsay noted that she sounded completely put out by this. Did you hear what I said? Dr. Griffith asked. Fracture, tibia, blah, 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 Emma said. She was in full-on pout now, which was pretty impressive given the amount of pain she had to be in. Here, Sully said. He had been carefully inspecting the porch while they talked, and he handed a short, flat board to Dr. Griffith. We'll need to brace her leg until we get her to the ambulance that's meeting us on the pier. This will do, Dr. Griffith said. He opened his bag again and pulled out a bag of bandages. While he worked on her leg, Emma addressed Sully. Officer Kirkland can bring me to shore and pick up Detective Trimble on the way back. Will you stay with Griffith until Kirkland returns? Sure, no problem, Sully said. Griffith, you don't go anywhere, not one step, unless Sully gives you the okay, she said. Am I clear? Careful, Chief Plewicki, or I'm going to think you care, he said. Don't get crazy, she said. He tightened the bandage that held her leg onto the board, and she visibly paled. It's just hard to find decent medical examiners these days. Vinegar and water, that's what you're made of, Chief. Griffith said with a chuckle. He looked at Sully and Kirkland. I'm going to need you two to carry her down to the boat and get her settled. Sully and Kirkland moved to stand on either side of Emma. She raised her arms and they hauled her up, balancing her weight between them. Dr. Griffith and Lindsay followed. It was slow moving to get Emma down the steps, and the rocking motion of the dock made it that much trickier for Sully and Kirkland to support her between them. Lindsay hurried ahead to hold the boat steady while the men lowered Emma onto one of the seats. Once she was settled, Kirkland assumed the controls, and Sully gave the boat a shove in the right direction. Keep the leg up, Griffith yelled over the sound of the motor, and Emma gave him a thumbs up. She's not going to listen to me, Griffith muttered. Nope, Sully agreed. Which is why I prefer to work with the departed, Griffith said. They seldom talk back. Once they were back up at the house, both Sully and Griffith refused to let Lindsay enter the house with them. It was deemed too dangerous, so she reluctantly waited out in the cold on the porch. She took the opportunity to check in at the library. Given that she had been due back an hour ago, she knew Beth and the others had to be wondering what had kept her. She took out her phone and discovered she'd missed 2 calls and 3 text messages. She always kept her cell phone volume off in the library because of the noise, but it meant she usually didn't catch her calls and texts until she went to use her phone. She glanced at the messages. They were all from Beth, and they got increasingly frantic. Lindsay felt badly about worrying her friend, but really, there had been no time to check in. She opened her contacts and selected Beth, who answered on the first ring. Where have you been? What is going on? We just saw Emma Plawicki being loaded into an ambulance, and then Detective Trimble arrived and took off in a boat with Officer Kirkland. Explain. In a town the size of Briar Creek, Lindsay knew keeping things quiet was a doomed objective from the start. But still, they didn't know exactly what had happened in the Rosen house, so she figured it was best if she just stuck to the facts. No details. When Sully and I arrived on the island, no one was there to meet us, so we went up to the house, she said. That's odd, Beth said. Stuart is always waiting for you. I know, and it gets worse, Lindsay said. When no one answered the door, we went in and discovered Peter Rosen in the kitchen, deceased. Oh, no, Beth wailed. How is Stuart taking it? This has to be horrible for him. For as long as I've lived and worked here, the Rosen brothers have only had each other. Well, there's no sign of Stuart, Lindsay said. She thought about his boat being at the dock and then disappearing, but she didn't mention it. Oh, well, he is a recluse. Maybe he is just processing all that has happened. Still, that doesn't explain Emma and the ambulance, Beth said. What happened? When Emma arrived, she went into the house on her own to investigate and set off one of the booby traps, which caused a small explosion and toppled a table onto her leg, which is now broken. How awful. Beth hissed a breath through her teeth. It was pretty bad, but Dr. Griffith thinks it might just be cracked and not broken all the way through, Lindsay said. That's so strange about Stuart, Beth said. I mean, he's been taking care of his brother for 50 years. Oh, dear. Do you think the grief was too much for him? You don't think he did any harm to himself, do you? I don't know, but I don't think so, Lindsay said. Her shoulders sagged as she thought about it. The stress of the day was beginning to feel overwhelming. Lindsay, don't say anything to anyone about Stuart. I don't know how much Emma wants everyone to know. Got it, Beth said. Is it okay if I mention that Peter Rosen has passed on? I mean, that's going to be hard to keep quiet with the medical examiner out there and all. Yeah, I think that it's okay, Lindsay said. She realized she hadn't told Beth how Peter had died and thought that was probably best kept quiet as well. How are you? Beth asked. You weren't the one to find him, were you? Sully actually spotted him first, Lindsay said. I'm glad he was with you, Beth said. Me too, Lindsay said. She glanced at the house, realizing how much she meant it. She couldn't imagine being here and dealing with all of this without Sully. How long are you staying out there? Emma asked us to wait for Detective Trimble to get here to assist Dr. Griffith, and then we're free to go. So I'm hoping to go back within the hour. Is all well at the library? The Lemon is having a fabulous time, giving her Shusher a workout while you're not here, Beth said. I saw old man Krakauer give her the stink eye when she gave him a shush with the raised eyebrows and pointer finger to the lips combo. Oh, brother, Lindsay said. The Lemon was Beth's nickname for Ms. Cole, the library's old-school librarian who really enjoyed shushing and fines. Lindsay knew she should discover the use of the name, but it fit so perfectly, and it had been in use long before she became the director. It was a dilemma. In all fairness to the Lemon, he deserved it, Beth said. He was watching a soccer match from Germany on one of the computers and was getting a bit boisterous. So long as she's not targeting the crying babies and toddlers, then we're good, Lindsay said. That's what I figured, Beth said. See you soon. I'll text you otherwise, Lindsay said. Be careful. They ended the call, and Lindsay glanced across the water back at town. She could just see the old stone captain's house that was now the library. Well, mostly she could see the flags on its flagpole flapping in the breeze, but still, she knew it was right there waiting for her. She wished she was in her office with a nice hot mug of coffee and some budget worksheets instead of freezing her tail off here in what was turning into a house of horrors. She began to pace to keep her blood flowing and try to warm up. She was on her second pass along the brick path from the deck to the house when she heard the sound of a motor. She turned around and saw Officer Kirkland with Detective Trimble from the state police pulling up to the dock below. She waved, and Detective Trimble waved back. He was a good-looking guy, somewhere in his mid-30s, always a snappy dresser, in a full suit with a tie. He was on the state police force and had helped Emma as well as the previous chief of police. Lindsay was quite fond of the detective and had come to think of him as one of their own. "Hi, Lindsay. I hear it's been a rough afternoon for visiting librarians," Trimble said as he and Kirkland joined her on the upper deck. Lindsay shook his hand. Through their gloves, it was impossible to get a good read off his handshake, but the strength was there, and Lindsay knew from past experience that Trimble was honest and diligent, two qualities that worked really well in a detective. Worse for police chiefs, but yeah, not a great visit, Lindsay said. Come on, I'll show you where Sully and Dr. Griffith are. You've been warned about the booby traps? Yes, Trimble said. He frowned at the backyard and all of its junk. Try to step only where I step, Lindsay said. She turned and led the way to the dainty Victorian. Trimble fell in behind her while Kirkland brought up the rear. She guided them over the middle step in the stairs and pointed out the board with the nails in the doorway. If Trimble hadn't appreciated the precariousness of the situation up until now, she knew this would cause him to reevaluate. 15 years on the force, and I've never seen anything like this, he said. Brace yourself. It's about to get worse, Lindsay said. Remember to step only where I step. This ends episode 2. We will continue where we left off in the next episode.
Happy holidays from the Talking Information Center. We want to wish you a joyful and healthy holiday season with hopes for great things to come in the new year.
Hi, this is Greg, one of the readers at the Talking Information Center. I wanted to wish every one of our listeners a Merry Christmas and a lot of joy, peace, and happiness in the upcoming new year.
This holiday season gives us the chance to tell you how much we appreciate you listening as we look forward to another year of providing you with programs to inform and enjoy.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy. You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with a link.
Okay.
Smart.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.